13. The True Meaning of Ictinio. When he opened his eyes, Modo wondered at first if he'd gone blind. He blinked, quivering. Darkness. Perhaps his eyes were frozen. He could feel warm air surrounding him, but every inch of his body trembled. He touched his face and traced the familiar lumps, his concave nose, his elongated ears. He had shifted back to his normal self. He patted his chest and discovered he wasn't wearing a shirt. He ran his hand over his back. The hump was still there. Even his numbed claw fingers recognized the shape. His underclothes had been removed, and he was naked under a prickly wool blanket. He tried to wiggle his toes, but felt nothing. Had his toes fallen off? He reached down and counted all 10. Someone had undressed him. Who? Had they seen his ugliness? The thought of someone else's eyes on him made him sick. The room was so humid he wheezed each breath. He was on a mattress of sorts. He felt a wooden frame, decided he was on a small cot. He waved his hands in the air and they brushed something cold and wet as an eel. It seemed to hang in the air above him. He stuck one hand out to the side and found a wall. At that moment, a light burst to life above him, and he raised a hand to shield his eyes. He saw the outline of a small dresser at the end of his cot. Someone knocked heavily on the door. He yanked the grey blanket up over himself and pushed his back against the wall, peeking out of the shadows. The narrow door swung into the room, banging against the cot. A man squeezed inside, his frame thick, a black beard striped with grey beneath his round glasses. He was wearing a blue military uniform without any stripes or markings. He looked like a clerk who'd been raised by woodsmen. He set a steaming bowl and a cup on the dresser, then spoke, but his words were guttural and unrecognizable. Another language. Modo said nothing in response.
English, then, the man said, his steady grey eyes measuring Modo.
You speak English.
Yeah,
Modo answered. His tongue was withered with dryness.
Yes.
I should have guessed. I've brought you a bowl of soup. Eat it slowly with the bread. Wash it down with the tea. Why do you hide yourself?
I'm naked.
I know that. I removed your clothing and hung it to dry.
The man pointed above Modo's head. Modo saw that it was his own wet trousers that he'd mistaken for an eel.
I apologize for doing so without permission, but you would never warm properly in your wet clothes. Why do you hide your face?
I suffer from an ailment.
What kind?
A facial deformity.
I saw no such thing. You did suffer a blow to the head. Is it affecting you?
No.
Though, now that he thought of it, his temples throbbed.
My deformity comes and goes. It's like a rash.
Well, do not feel that you must hide your condition. That is the old way of thinking. You are among equals. There are no deformities here.
The man said this in such a matter-of-fact manner that Modo felt as though he'd been chastised.
I've brought some clothing that I hope will be suitable. It's not as stylish as your own garments, but we are not concerned about fashion. You should consume your food. It will bring you back to health.
He pointed a thick index finger at the bowl.
Where am I?
The captain will inform you of any details you need to know.
When will I meet him?
The man shrugged two lumpy shoulders.
When the captain decides.
May I ask your name?
The man's smile was friendly.
Anselm Serda, he said,
then backed out of the room and closed the door.
Modo pulled on grey trousers, a thick wool sweater, and a seaman's wool cap that covered his ears. He massaged his toes. They were grey and cold, but he could move them now. He put on the socks and thick-soled shoes the man had provided. Modo tried to lift the bowl of soup, but his shaking hands spilled so much that he had to leave it on the dresser and lean over it. Then he couldn't control the spoon. The few drops he got into his mouth were salty and heavenly. Finally, he lapped it up like a dog, which left some unfamiliar vegetables and a white, fishy meat at the bottom. He scooped these out with trembling fingers. When he was done, he felt a little more energetic. The tea was salty and sweet, with a faint orange flavor. He lay down again. The ceiling light was bright and contained in a circular glass-enclosed compartment. There was no flame, so it was neither gas nor oil. The whole room thrummed, and a sense of gentle vibration came from everything he touched. It was a ship of sorts, and if this wasn't all a dream, it was a ship that could travel under the water. He'd read about attempts at underwater exploration, but those vessels had been tiny and powered by pedals. This was surely powered by steam. But if it was, how were they venting the coal smoke? He couldn't imagine any other way to remove such bulk through the depths of the ocean. It was the kind of technology that Mr. Socrates had hoped they might find when he'd sent them on this assignment. A steamship that travelled underwater, ramming ships from below. Whoever had an army of these vessels would rule the seas. Modo leapt from the cart and dug into his wet vest pocket. He pulled out the wallet, soaked, of course, containing the wireless telegraph. Surprisingly, the telegraph still looked usable, but he assumed the electric cell had been destroyed by seawater. He set the telegraph under the cot to dry. Someone banged on the door.
"Come out," Serdar commanded. "The captain wishes to meet you."
"Yes. Yes, one moment."
Modo felt in his wet pants pocket and found the net mask. He squeezed out the salt water and pulled it over his face, then put the seaman's cap back on. His legs were wobbly and threatened to cramp up, but he forced himself to the door. He stepped into a narrow corridor lit by three more of the mysterious round lights. Serdar looked down at him.
"You cover your face."
"I must," Modo said. "I'm ashamed of my rash."
Serdar nodded and led Modo down the corridor. The walls were grey metal with railings every few feet. The floor was hardwood that shone in the light. Bolts protruded from the wood, providing traction. They passed several more cabins and came to a winding iron staircase that took them into a large, darkened oval chamber. Modo limped, and occasionally a sharp pain shot up his legs, making him grit his teeth. It was 12 steps to the bottom. He'd also counted each of his steps from the cabin so he could guess the length of the ship, presuming his room had been near one end. Now he tried to figure out what this room was. The only light in the chamber was entering through a cluster of glass portholes. He squinted, had the impression that there were levers and perhaps a wheel to one side. Then he saw what was on the other side of the glass. Fish. He shuffled as quickly as his body would let him across the room to look out. Grey fish, with bulbous eyes, goggled back at him as if they were just as surprised to see him. How deep in the ocean could the ship be?
"It is a marvellous sight," a woman said.
Modo spun around to see that he had walked right past two women standing in the shadows. "I let my surprise overcome my training," he thought. How stupid. Tharpa had drilled into him that he should always take full stock of any room he entered. He was taking stock of the first woman now. Tall, dressed in black, with a red sash across her waist, a small cutlass in her belt. Her hair and eyes were dark, her skin ivory.
"Yes, it is quite the sight," Modo agreed.
She glared at him, her gaze not wavering. She was at least 30 years old, but the bags under her eyes made her seem older. Beside her was a young woman in a long skirt who wore her dark hair pulled back in large barrettes. She seemed angry, too. Her familiar features were vaguely oriental. Then it came to him. The photograph. The woman standing before him was the French spy, Colette Brunette.